Interest rates are up and the market is tumultuous. And now more than ever, you need the best darn possible mortgage broker working on your behalf. That's Gabe Winslow, and you can reach him at 832-557-1095, or you can go to mortgagesbygabe.com. What makes Gabe so unique? Well, he's incredibly bright. He's a UT grad. He's got a law degree. He's been in the mortgage industry for over 20 years, and he is a true mortgage broker. What does that mean? It means he can shop for the best deal at over 80 different lenders and find you the terms that best suit you. Most mortgage guys you talk to won't reveal that they have exactly one size fits all for you and exactly one conduit to get your loan. If you are in these hyper-competitive markets and you're in these markets that have frankly gotten a lot less friendly to the consumer, you need the best possible person working on your behalf. That's Gabe Winslow. He has our full endorsement. You can reach him at 832-557-1095.
So to put a little bow on what Ian was talking about, you'll actually find this story in a podcast early in Everyone Gets a Trophy called Atomic Aggies.
Yeah.
And it's my dad went to West Point and they had a big military conference in the early 1960s, late 50s, I guess, maybe early 60s, I don't know, height of the Cold War. And so they had guys from Navy, Annapolis, West Point, this new Air Force Academy that they're getting up and running, right? VMI, all these private military academies, and A&M. And my dad, of course, shows up in his West Point plain gray tunic, right? And the Aggies are strutting around with medals all over their chest. And these are cadets, like these are sophomores and juniors, thigh-high polished boots, carrying swagger sticks. And he said, all the, West Point guys are just looking at them like, okay. And then they go into this conference. And the idea was to war game stuff and basically show these young future military leaders that there is soft power, there's hard power. And there's ways to solve diplomatic crises with the threat of military action, but not actual military action. So they would break them into groups and they'd war game different scenarios. And one of them might be as innocuous, height of the Cold War, right? Your diplomat in Bulgaria has been kidnapped. What do you do? And there's a large number of political, economic, and all sorts of other arm twisting you can do to reach some sort of solution. Or you can just do a, straight up trade. Hey, we've got two KGB guys and, loitering in a cell in Langley. Let's exchange them. Whatever. Every single war scenario with the Aggies ended in nuclear war. To the point where the colonels and I think light generals that were running this conference were visibly irritated and frustrated with them and would explain to them after every scenario that this, ending the world was not necessary because your Bulgarian diplomat was detained and accused of being a spy. And the Aggies were like, we're fighting Aggies.
Oh, the Russians threatened to hire Mark Stoops.
That's right. So let's
That's
talk about that part. Why did the Aggies respond with a revolt of a guy who's quite similar to Mike Elko and actually has a proven track record as a head coach in the SEC?
yeah, Mike Elko with actual skins on the wall. But he's not one of us. That's the thing.
But Elko became one of them for coaching there for 4 years. Is that how it works?
I think so.
Is it
Also,
because Stoops is just seen as a mid SEC coach in Aggie minds and that this was a concession of defeat rather than the upside potential of Elko?
yes, because I tweeted like Ross Bjork. I want to hire a proven coach with SEC experience. And then Aggies, we want you to hire an unproven blank canvas upon which we can paint our hopes and dreams.
Yeah.
And now all fans are guilty of that. All message board fans are like that. Texas fans.
Texas has gone through this exercise a couple of times, mind
And
you.
some have even have said that, like, whoever the message board fans revolt against the hardest is usually like the best hire. Like when
Nah.
That's probably not, it's not true. But like when Kansas State hired Chris Klieman, Kansas State fans freaked out.
Yes.
Like, why are we hiring an FCS coach? We should be at a higher level now. And obviously that was like one of the dumber takes ever. Cause he's,
oh, they were like, why aren't we going after Mel Tucker? God. Right.
Yeah. Chris Klieman is one of the, in my opinion, one of the top coaches in America, honestly, it, especially for a job like that. He's been great for them, but yeah, Mark Stoops, he's, I mean, I don't know. The fact that he's been as effective as he is at Kentucky, but I don't, he's also had all of his warts revealed by being at,
yes, Kentucky.
I think that's the thing, is that like the devil you know versus the devil you don't. What in college hires, it's like you want the devil you don't know.
To give you a crazier example, on my offensive post-mortem, there's a poster who responds, hey, what I saw from this game, Arch Manning should start against Oklahoma State. And he was not kidding. So
I will say this, Paul. I was really excited about Quinn Ewers probably coming back for another year until I watched Arch Manning in this game.
Oh, no. Ian's been affected.
Now, I know that Arch Manning was playing against a Tech team that had quit. And it wasn't. But I don't know.
Hey, Ian, I got good news for you.
Tell me the good news.
The Mannings aren't stage dads. They're not looking to live out their unfulfilled dreams through their son or nephew. They aren't street agents. There's a plan. There's a developmental plan. They're 100% bought into it. He will start 2 years at quarterback at the University of Texas some point in the future, next year or the year after. And that's the plan.
What if next year Quinn is solid and then you get 1 year of brilliant Arch as a redshirt sophomore and then he's in the NFL?
Great. No. We went to the playoff.
We went to the playoff. That was not part of the.
Yeah, we went to the playoff. We just went to the playoff. In fact, we won. We won the national championship. Yay.
Oh, the 1 year Arch is there?
Yeah.
Maybe. Maybe. Depends on how the cycles line up.
Look, again, let me reiterate my talking points, Ian, because they weren't absorbed by you fully.
They were not.
The Mannings are not street agents. The Mannings know football. The Mannings are confident and secure in letting Arch develop as a quarterback and as a human being.
I'm not worried about him transferring.
No, not just transferring. Unless he's outrageously good as a redshirt sophomore, he will play 2 years at the University of Texas.
What if he's outrageously good as a redshirt sophomore?
Then we won the national championship, you dumbo. What are you fretting about?
Maybe not. What if the defense?
Oh, what if we lose it by a point? Then everything's just worthless and we'll never get another quarterback. Good Lord. You should have gone to A&M, Ian. That's what we just learned here.
If this ever plays out in a way that plays to my side of the argument.
How is it going to play to you? I'm telling you that
what dunk on you like you're Sean Bradley.
No, you're not, because I just conceded your entire argument and said good.
Like Sean Bradley.
You don't understand any. You don't understand any of the words that were just exchanged over the last 5 minutes to you. You're an Archmania. A quarter of football has twisted your usual rational mind.
You're going to be like one of those Slovakian dudes with Michael Jordan's drawers in their face.
All right, drawers. Very good. Let me reiterate the conversation. If Arch Manning doesn't play here 2 years, it's because his 1 year was incredibly spectacular. And you already said Quinn's good next year, right? If he comes back. Isn't that what your, wasn't that your premise?
I honestly think what will happen is.
And by the way, Arch might, he might win the job. He might take it over after an injury, whatever.
I don't think Sark rolls that way. Well, after an injury is the thing, right? That is what I think is extremely. Yeah.
He might just take over the job.
Wynn gets hurt next year, and then we get ultra drama because Arch comes in and is ready.
Yeah, I'm not a starter doesn't lose his job to injury guy. I'm a starter can lose his job to injury guy.
I think Sark might be that. I don't think he will supplant Ewers with Arch next year, even if Arch is better in fall camp. I think Hudson Card was better in fall camp than Ewers last year, and he still played Ewers. I think Sark will do what is politically necessary, and then he'll scheme his way to make it work.
Yeah. So again, back to my point, because there'll be no dunking because you're not understanding. I'm even agreeing with your premise. If he plays here for 2 years, that's the plan. If he only plays here for 1 year, it means something wonderful and spectacular happened in that 1 year.
But it could be wonderful and spectacular for him.
All right, he just threw for 5,000 yards and 47 touchdowns, but we went 7-5. Is that the plan, Ian?
What if that happened?
Well, then we probably should fire Pete Kwiatkowski, shouldn't we?
Well, what will happen is you will be Sean Bradley.
God, this is so stupid.
I will be Kemp.
Oh, you have how many illegitimate children do you have? All your children are with one woman.
Yeah,
you'll never be Sean Kemp. All right, I want to talk about a guy. Did you see the Mississippi State athletic director being carried around on someone's shoulders on the tarmac in Starkville, Mississippi?
I think so, yeah.
So Jeff Lebby, now the new head coach at Mississippi State. I did not think he would land a head coaching gig in the SEC, no less, but he did. We knew he was not long for OU. That was obvious. I want to talk about the implications of that hire, not only Mississippi State, which I don't care a ton about, but what does it mean for his offense at Mississippi State? Will Rogers obviously has entered the portal.
Yeah.
Is he going to take Dylan Gabriel with him? Or might he, by the way, there are people who think he might try to take Jackson Arnold with him.
I think he'll take Dylan Gabriel.
You think so?
Let me tell you this about Oklahoma.
Tell me something about Oklahoma, Ian, because you're the guy who says they honor concussion protocols. You have a deep understanding of Oklahoma psyche and culture.
I missed that one.
No, you know why you missed it? Because you assumed, like, Oklahoma's both evil and sneaky. They entered, Dylan Gabriel had a severe concussion, right? He was listed on the injury report as unspecified upper body injury, not concussion protocol guy.
I don't know if he had a severe concussion. It didn't look good.
He had a moderate to mild concussion.
He probably had a concussion.
Okay. So my point is, OU is smart enough to understand not to enter him in the concussion protocol.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's what they did. That's why they bypassed it.
Yeah. Because then he wouldn't play.
Speaks to your honesty and general straightforwardness as a person, which is an admirable quality. But when it comes to understanding OU,
it
hampers you. Your decency hampers you, Ian.
They benched Gabriel in the protocol a year ago.
Yeah.
And it was one of the most painful losses to Texas they'd ever had.
And they learned something from it.
It's either that or it's that. I mean, there was other factors too. Like everyone watched Dylan Gabriel be unconscious on the field against TCU.
Yeah.
When he went out against BYU, it was like, wait, what happened?
Yeah.
Because it was kind of innocuous. Also, they were never beating Texas, no matter what. Now, I overlooked both of those points. For sure.
So you think Dylan Gabriel is going to be the Mississippi State Bulldog quarterback? He'll have a $500,000, $700,000 NIL deal for 1 year?
That'd be my guess. I know that Oklahoma is determined to keep Jackson Arnold, and I think they'll take their lumps with him in 2024 over trying to, because if they keep Dylan Gabriel, they lose Jackson Arnold.
Is Seth Luttrell going to be the OC?
I think so.
Okay. Is he going to run the Lebby offense, or is he going to run more pure air raid?
I think that they'll try to maintain some of the Lebby offense.
Because Jackson Arnold is a veer and shoot quarterback.
Yes. So something to watch there is if Jojon Finley sticks or not, or if Lebby poaches him.
Okay.
Is Jojon Finley got a job with Baylor after he finished his career as a tight end at Oklahoma, learned the system, and then taught it to Josh Heupel, from what I can tell. And has traveled around with Heupel or Lebby ever since. Sort of like how Sterling Gilbert was like, I got to have Maddox when Texas. I need somebody else who knows the system. Jojon Finley has been that guy for Heupel and for Lebby. Like, I need somebody else in the staff room that understands this. So if he sticks at Oklahoma, I think they'll just, and Luttrell has been probably learning it as an analyst all year.
Yeah.
I don't know how hard the system is to master.
Yeah, but so like you and I could learn the system.
I think right? So.
The question is it in our DNA?
Right.
And what is Seth Luttrell's DNA? It's kind of a pure air raid.
But he was a fullback.
Which means he didn't see the field much.
No, he did though.
Oh, you're right. You're right. He did actually. You're right.
My point is he
has his own history and his own predilections.
Yeah.
And most people try to operate an environment they're most comfortable in.
I think that they will go to Luttrell. Although there's an opportunity now that could try to go get Sean Lewis.
Who also
runs the system.
What's
that?
At pace.
Yeah. They could get him, and that would not be a terrible idea. I think they'll just go with Luttrell though, and maybe they'll end up with a more run heavy version of the offense.
Okay. Interesting.
That'd be my guess. Because they still have Bill Beatenbow, who's been there for, Beatenbow's been there for air raid guys in the past, and they've still maintained like
physicality,
and we're going to run the ball. And some of the other guys are, I feel like there's at least one of DeMarco Murray, I guess.
Hey, no. Just going pure football theory, just as guys who like college football. Is Lebby the kind of, is he a correct hire for Mississippi State? Is he contrarian enough to win there?
Maybe. Yeah. I actually think he's really clever. I think that his version of the offense is like he studied it and he takes it seriously.
Yep.
And he adds wrinkles and he finds ways. Like you watch Oklahoma the last 2 years, they'll catch teams in the second half all the time by finding some formation that gives them fits, like a particular formation and a particular run scheme where the extreme spacing of the system, because they keep the receivers like really far away from the box. He'll tinker around and he'll find something that just like catches you with your pants down, and then he'll hammer you with it until you fix it. Whereas Kendall Briles, who's the direct son of Art Briles rather than the son-in-law like Jeff Lebby, he looks like he's just mailing it in every week, and he just shows up and like calls the offense, and if it works, it works, and if it doesn't, I don't know.
Well, his default solution to all puzzles is run the quarterback.
Yeah.
And that's not a good answer.
If the Briles family, if they had a like a crime family or something or an empire, Art would try to pass it on to Lebby.
Give it to the son-in-law. Yeah.
Yeah. He would be the adopted heir of the system because he's way more clever with it. In some sense, I think he's a good risk for Mississippi State, but let me throw a conspiracy theory at you. You ready?
Sure.
Mississippi State's athletic director is Zach Selman, who was up till now an administrator in the Oklahoma athletic department for a very long time.
Okay.
Jeff Lebby does not like Jeff. Sorry. Joe Castiglione, the Sooner athletic director, does not like Jeff Lebby.
Right.
Because they crossed him. He crossed him on the Art Briles thing and was defiant. And as you said, was told either you apologize or you're fired.
Yep.
You knew at that moment that Lebby was going to be gone by the end of the year. But he's a very successful offensive coordinator, so you can't really just fire him. He needs to find a good landing spot. And lo and behold, Joe Castiglione's right-hand man, Selman, who's the athletic director of Mississippi State, and some say is likely to replace Joe Castiglione when he shuts it down in Oklahoma, clears the space for him.
Do you know where Selman, you know, well, his ties to Oklahoma, how deep they are beyond just work, having worked there? You know what they are?
What are they?
Do you know who the Selman brothers are?
No.
These are legendary 1970s defensive linemen for this Oklahoma Sooners. Two brothers, Leroy and Dewey Selman. And they are to defensive line play and Sooner lore what Casey Hampton and Tavondre Sweat and Steve McMichael are to Texas. Ooh. He's the son and nephew of the Selman brothers. So pretty interesting.
So there you go.
Yeah.
I think it makes some degree of sense for Mississippi State.
Yeah.
You think Lebby is a clever mind who can, I think he sets a really high floor for your offense. Especially if he gets Dylan Gabriel to take a sixth year or whatever and go transfer there. But I think this was also, hey, Selman, do me a solid and your road is paved when I step down at Oklahoma.
I like it. The concern you have for any coordinator hire is they're not a head coach. I'm going to say something that will outrage everyone. It's not an endorsement of Art Briles, but Art Briles was a successful head coach. And yeah. Lebby's got a free consultant for many aspects of his program. I'd encourage him not to consult Art on some aspects of his program, like criminality and reporting crimes, you know, recruiting character, etc. But no, all joking aside, that's powerful. That's helpful. And I said on this pod with Randy, hey, I know the Art Briles stuff is a big deal for people in Texas, particularly. It's not as big a deal once you get outside of Texas. And I think the Mississippi State hire just proved that. And I promise you, Art Briles will be on the side. You know, he'll be wearing Mississippi State colors with his family after games. Greetings.
I was going to say, I don't know a lot about Mississippi State. But what I do know makes me think that they're not really going to care.
They're not going to care. As long as he wins.
Yeah.
Not an easy job at Mississippi State. But, you know, if you're sufficiently contrarian at any of those schools, I think you have a shot, right? Whether you're Leach or Dan Mullen. You know, the worst thing they could have done is hire a ball coach. It's like, we're going to out tough them, right? That's Sylvester Croom, if anybody remembers that guy. Right. You're going to go 3-9. You're going to go 2-10. So yeah, interesting. Speaking of the portal, go ahead.
Also the Mississippi, whenever you see a guy come out of the Mississippi JUCO system, all the offenses are like air raidy type deals.
Yeah.
And if you're a Mississippi State, your program has to be, we're going to find the three-star defensive lineman or linebacker that's a future NFL guy that for whatever reason the other SEC schools passed over. And there's a fair number of them. That's part of your strategy. And then the other part is we're going to bring in Mississippi JUCOs every year on offense.
Interesting factoid about Mississippi. Every year, every recruit who is two stars or higher, over half of them are academic non-qualifiers.
Yeah.
So that Mississippi State JUCO system you mentioned is essential for any Mississippi program who wants to recruit at home.
I think they have a current governor that's trying to erase that. Actually have the state invest in education for the first time in 300 years. But it'll be a lagging indicator before that.
Singapore doesn't win all the world testing because of their student teacher ratio and their investment in education. They win because when you get home, your parents make you study for 3 hours.
Yeah.
The U.S. is the most funded education system in the world.
Well, Mississippi.
Mississippi, not so much.
Maybe an outlier. So
the point is,
they could progress to the mean.
They could progress to the mean. That's the hope, right? That's the goal.
I think that's what they're trying to do.
Yeah. Well, there's the old expression in the South, right? Thank God for Mississippi. Which
What's
is
that from?
We'd be dead last if not for Mississippi. That's what people in Louisiana say. That's what people in Alabama say, Arkansas, etc. You never heard that?
That makes sense, though.
Yeah, sometimes the state changes. Sometimes they'll say, thank God for Louisiana, thank God for Alabama. But it's usually Mississippi. And it's usually a neighboring state. Yeah. And it's usually like, oh, thank God we're 48th or 49th and not 50. All right. Portal has opened. Yeah. Texas has many needs. Hopefully we'll attack it as effectively as we did last year. Will Howard entered the portal. Does that surprise you at all?
Not really.
Where do you think he's going to go?
Where do I think he's going to go? Well,
yeah.
Somebody going to money whip Colin Klein. Notre Dame almost did a year ago. Could A&M be interested in Colin Klein?
No.
No? Why not?
It's just not their thing.
They should be. They should try to get Colin Klein. And depending on what Connor Wickman does, Will Howard or Riley Leonard in the transfer portal. Well, I don't know. The quarterback and the top running and the shiftier running back at Kansas State both entered the transfer portal today.
I think Sean. It's, yeah.
Yeah. Sean Ward. I think it's because they knew that next year it's going to be, is it Giddens? Is the power back that they have at Kansas State? And they have Avery Johnson. I call him the skinny general.
Yep.
Amazing athlete at quarterback. If you have like an extremely fast quarterback in an option offense, you want a power running back next to him. If you have like a really powerful Tim Tebow type quarterback that can run between the tackles, then you want the running back to be a burner. And Giddens and skinny general Avery Johnson are in a perfect pairing. So I think the other two just saw the writing on the wall.
Interesting. Yeah, I think we'll see some good players go in the portal. I'm very curious to see how Texas approaches it.
You know what stood out to me? Relique Brown at USC, explosive little slot receiver, entered the transfer portal. And I happen to think that a better strategy for Texas next year than trying to replace Jatavion Sanders if he goes in the draft, which is just not going to happen, would be to go get a explosive, feed him the ball 80 times slot receiver and play more 11 personnel and then live with Gunnar Helms efficiencies and deficiencies as the sole tight end.
So Relique Brown is a sophomore.
Yeah.
He had 3 catches this year for 18 yards, but is he hurt or something? What did I miss?
I don't know if he's any good.
Oh, great.
But he's a matter day kid. Clark knows him. A slot receiver in general is what I would be looking at if I'm Texas in the portal.
So Drake Stoops.
Not Drake Stoops.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm just trying to keep an open mind.
Someone that would be like, more like Brennan Presley, honestly, not to step on the next podcast. Or, even better, somebody that can get vertical.
I think we'll have slot guys. I think we need to get a replacement from Mitchell.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if Wingo plays immediately, is it more likely that he's in the slot or outside?
Maybe outside, but he needs time to to blossom. He's pretty raw. I think there's word going around that McMillan, the receiver for Arizona, who's awesome. You've seen that guy play?
Not
6'5", five-star recruit, awesome player. There's word that he might be interested in the portal. So that would be the guy you target, 100%.
Sure. I mean, an outside receiver, you always go for that.
Tight ends are hard to find the portal, man.
Yeah. I mean, you got to scour like my neck of the woods.
You got to look on MAC teams and find the dude with 48 receptions and a Polish last name.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, because the ones that are good and successful are typically at Notre Dame, Iowa, wherever, right? They're already there and sort of getting their reps and they're the focus of the offense. So be interesting. Curious to see if we can persuade maybe Maryland. He's the receiving tight end at SMU.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty good player. I don't think he's Jatavion Sanders, but.
Do you remember where Travis Kelce went to high school? Or, sorry, college?
Cincinnati.
Yeah. He was basically a full-time flex receiver for them.
Yeah. Yeah, if we can add a Travis Kelce in the portal, that would be good. That would help our team. And we'll get all that Taylor Swift positive vibes from the Swifties.
Can you imagine if Arch Manning had to take over as quarterback when they had that extra? Aggies would lose their minds. All the attention Texas would get, Aggies would lose their minds.
Hey, we got to go to College Station next year. They're going to be fired up, man. Hey, speaking of rivalries, did you have any thoughts on Ohio State, Michigan?
I did.
Have they passed? You're done now? You don't need to express them?
Well, I did express them on the Substack today, americaswargame.substack.com.
Ah, good plug. I didn't have a chance to read it yet. Give me a synopsis.
Yeah, I will. Ryan Day seems to have convinced himself that the reason he kept losing to Michigan was because Michigan was more physical and that he needed to go into this game and out-physical Michigan and run the ball and beat them at their own game. And that was a stupid, stupid idea.
I totally agree.
Now, maybe he was backed into a corner a little bit because it seems like Kyle McCord is a little bit limited and might have been injured. But that was still a stupid idea. And let me tell you the number one stupid idea. Their best offense is to play 11 personnel, spread the field, and their tight end, Cade Stover, is very much a NFL receiving tight end. But tell the listeners, Paul, what's the problem with NFL receiving tight ends?
What's the problem with NFL receiving tight ends?
Yeah, in a college game.
I don't know. What is it?
They don't run block that well.
Oh, well, yeah.
But if you're in 11 personnel, you got six blockers for six defenders in a nickel defense, and one of your blockers is an NFL receiver, tight end guy. And then you go into the game and you're like, we're going to win this game by establishing the run. You see the problem here?
I got it. Yeah, I got it. So you're saying it's incongruent with the game, with their personnel were incongruent with the game plan.
They needed to go into that game saying, we are wide receiver you. We're going to throw the ball 50 times if we have to. And trying to play Michigan's game was just not a good idea.
Yeah, I thought the best thing they could have done, especially after watching a couple of series, was scheme Stover and Harrison Jr. open as much as possible and throw the ball around. Because Marvin Harrison Jr. is the best guy on the field. And he runs amazing routes. He's not just a physical talent, right? And Stover impressed me. I mean, he's legit.
As a receiver.
As a receiver. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think they, you know, I mean, they did throw the ball. They weren't super. Yeah. I thought they should have come in a little more tempo throwing the ball around, because Michigan's definitely has not seen that level of athlete.
No, they've both been feasting on awful Big Ten offenses all year.
Yeah. Don't tell the playoff committee that.
Yeah. I don't know if either of them, but are really playoff contenders, but Michigan played on the pick six. They played bracket coverage on Harrison, zero man on the other three receivers, and then had a safety near the box to outnumber the run.
And Abuka is going to be an NFL draft pick. I mean, two rounds, right?
But Michigan's gambit was, you're not going to throw to Harrison. You're not going to run the ball easily. Young quarterback, throw it to Abuka, throw it to Stover, throw it to Fleming. We don't think you'll do it well enough. And he didn't.
Yeah, it was interesting.
I think Michigan lives in Lions Day's head right now.
I'd say that's clearer.
Yeah. To tell everyone what you think he should do is his next career move.
I think he should go coach the Los Angeles Chargers.
This is inspired.
Yeah. You're a multimillionaire. You live in a great house, great weather. You're in a gated community. You're living the California dream for the ultra wealthy, right? Which is what California is increasingly sort of set up for, non-workers and the ultra wealthy, right? Be a part of the ultra wealthy. Have a fan base with no expectations. No one's going to like yell at your kids in school about your dad, and go live the dream. Go have fun.
The national media will get on you, but who cares?
Who cares? Oh, Stephen A. Smith has a segment about you. Oh no.
Yeah. Staley's fine with it. So
who?
Staley, the current Chargers head coach.
Yeah. That's the move.
That's great. And then how much you want to bet Urban Meyer tries to get that job back?
I don't know. Has he been lobbying for it?
Well, he did that Swamp Kings documentary.
Yeah, that was silly.
Which I thought was a joke. I thought that was him being like,
let me try to resurrect my reputation.
Yeah, like
with a sepia tone documentary that doesn't mention anything that happened.
Exactly the ruthless authoritarian you need to win a championship.
I think he's a gifted coach.
I care too much and I expect too much from my players.
That's right. It's the guy you interview and he's like, I think my problem is I just work too hard and I care too much, right? That's my weakness. Yeah. I don't know, man. I'm excited about where Texas has found itself, 11-1, playing for the Big 12 title. Playoff hopes alive, but probably requiring help from others. Go ahead.
If they win, they're going to be in.
We can discuss that.
What?
We're going to discuss that on another podcast.
Okay.
Because I have certain beliefs about the system and how it's set up and the kinds of people who are on that committee. Let's just say I'm not impressed. So we are going to continue this TBD. In that, we're going to talk about the playoffs and we're going to talk about the matchup against Oklahoma State. Is that fair?
That's good.
All right. Well, for Ian Boyd, I am Paul Wadlington saying it's good to be 11-1 and hook them. Are you worried that recent events have derailed your retirement plans? It certainly made us reassess all aspects of ours, and that's why we're proud to offer our listeners a chance to work with David McClellan, a fiduciary financial advisor from Forum Financial. David's practice specializes in financial life coaching and retirement planning, and right now he's offering free consultations for our listeners if you mention the podcast. As part of this consultation, David can help you understand your financial freedom number and what that means to you in assessing your future financial plans. If you want to build wealth, if you want to make optimal decisions within your financial life, David is someone you need to talk to. You can reach him at 312-933-8823. Once again, That's David McClellan at 312-933-8823. He's located in Austin, Texas, but he's got a nationwide clientele. Do yourself a favor and get some great financial advice for free and see if you might want to work with Mr. McClellan. I think you'll be happy with your phone call. Do you need a realtor in Central Texas? Of course you do. We all need a realtor in Central Texas, even those of us who live in Dallas or Houston or San Francisco or Denver, Colorado. You need to go to Central Texas anyway. And the reason is Laura Baker is a fantastic realtor. She's great at what she does. She's a member of the elite Andy Allen team for Keller Williams. You can reach her at 512-784-0505. Talk with Laura if you're thinking about putting your house on the market. This is a great time to get market comps. If you're looking to buy in the market, you need all the help you can get. Call Laura and it's 512-784-0505.